It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, awesome. I'm told that we are running straight, true, and hot on both Head On Live and WhiteRoseSociety.org on both of those streams. Thanks for letting me know, Jack in Shreveport and Brother Deacon Asa. Much appreciated. With that in mind, before we get to the shilly-shallying, let me just remind folks, if you try to go to tune in and that doesn't work, then that means the White Rose stream is down, and that means, in turn, that you need to go to headon.live, where the stream seldom, if ever, fails. Headon.live. Okay? Cool. So, here we are, the 15th day of January, 2018. It is the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, which, of course, is fraught with potential morality by virtue of the occupant of the current occupant of the White House. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that? Okay, I've done it now. And, of course, he spent his holiday not contemplating the moral arc of the universe that bends toward justice, but instead playing golf on our dime again, charging the Secret Service to stay at some dump hotel of his, and generally ripping us off and being a racist and prattling on about how he didn't say shithole when everybody everybody except the knee-walking sycophants say, yeah, he did. He did. So that's, you know, that's today. Thanks. There are always thanks to go out before just about every program. And we have thanks going out this evening to our subscribers, to Timothy. And to Darlene in Connecticut, as well as to Jim in Spain. Thanks to Rico up in DeBerg. Sorry about the Steelers, man. Robert in California. Thank you, Robert. And to our friends at Eastern States Pet Express. Thank you, one and all, as well as James in California, and thanks very kindly to Matt in San Francisco, and to Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. And then finally, we send out thanks to Gary in Oregon. Thank you, Gary. And thank you to Scott down in Florida. That would be our buddy VT Blom in the chat room. So that's our, that's where the subscriptions stand for the evening. And a reminder, we're trying something new this month. If we can keep up with the fundraising goal for one more week, okay, this is the third full week of January, for one more week, next week we'll begin fundraising free broadcasts. If we can keep up, that means raising $200 each evening. So we've got $200 to go. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12.50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and of course 64 at $3.13. And we'll round up from that half a penny from 12 and a half cents. We will round up that half penny and put it in the chlorine fund for the Olympic kidney-shaped swimming pool here at the mansion. Okay? So that's and of course it's Moran Monday on the horn, with the Dr. King holiday always falling on a Monday, and that's how it got to be a holiday. Remember, they sold capitalism on the idea that they could have a reason to sell. You know, it's the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Holiday White Sale down at Mattress, whatever. Yeah, that's how that happened. It really did. But the fact that the Dr. King holiday falls on a Monday means that there will always be a ready supply of Morans, because there are still people who are driven quite to distraction by the idea that Dr. King has a holiday right up there with, Lincoln and Washington and Robert E. Lee, right? It drives them absolutely. It drives the racists and the Klansmen and the neo-Nazis, the maggots, the Republicans. It drives them absolutely batshit crazy. So we will be dealing with some of that tonight. If you'd like to help out, just run over either to headon.live or headonradionetwork.com. Click the PayPal button. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. You set it, you forget it, and you're done. If not, just put in a regular amount, a one-time, and we'll be off and running. Okay? And you can do that either at headon.live or at headonradionetwork.com. Both places also, there's not one at headonradionetwork.com, but at headon.live there's a link to the Patreon campaign. That all of those just come out on the first of the month, one way or the other. And we don't quite have one day's worth of Patreon subscribers for any given month. We don't quite have that. But it would sure be nice to and that's for people mainly who can't stand PayPal. So there's that. Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. Note coming in from Sister Carol Baker. Holy shit, I can hear you on National Racist Come Screaming Out of the Closet Day. Because unfortunately, that is sort of what the Dr. King holiday is for some. It's also the one day a year when pasty-faced, doughy old white politicians recall the only thing they know that Dr. King ever said that meant anything to them, and that was that a person should be judged on the content of their character, not the color of their skin, which they think gives them license to discriminate against people for, not being white. Because geniuses. Yes, yes, yes indeed. Let's see. I'm feeling fairly perky this evening. Largely because of the hard working periodontic peripatetic scientists over at Horn Nutraceuticals, Horn Labs, at Horn Labs on Twitter. I'm feeling particularly good today because, well, doggone it, I just wanted something a little special. And the folks, the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, well, they came up with something that they thought would do the trick. That's right. This evening, for the first time ever, trackless truffles. Trackless truffles. A bullshit nutritional supplement, the likes of which you have never experienced unless you've taken other Horn Labs bullshit nutritional supplements, because they're all the same, absolutely meaningless, and without nutritional value whatsoever. Trackless truffles from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. You'll love them. Now, truffles are pricey, so it's $122.18 for a 3-month supply. But if you order them right now, we'll send you a little bundle of test strips that you can use to prove what we already know, that trackless truffles from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, well, it has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever, just like all the other bullshit nutritional supplements that have to be, that you have to have if you're going to be a professional radio program. And since there's absolutely no value to them whatsoever, it doesn't taste nearly as nasty as, say, ground up paleo chocolate chicken bone goop that you might buy from a certain guy who sounds a lot like this. So, trackless truffles from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Use no hooks, post no bills, accept no substitutes. This side up, FOB, COD, PIG, truffles. You'll be glad you didn't. Operators aren't standing by. Not at all. Not at all. Also, before we jump into the Moranity, we've got another little matter to attend to. That's right. It's time for This Day in Horn History. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Vox holographic time machine back 3,653 days, all the way back to January the 15th, 2008. Bob opens the show, miffed at the recent news that notorious coal baron and real-life Dick Dastardly cartoon stand-in Don Blankenship has successfully appealed an earlier $76 million verdict against his company, Massey Energy, a recent New York Times story. Has revealed that the coal villain Blankenship has bribed a West Virginia justice, Elliot Spike Maynard. The two were seen vacationing together in Monaco, even as the case against Blankenship's company was ongoing. Later on in the program, Bob's dreading the FDA's recent decision to allow meat from cloned and genetically spliced animals to hit the market. I don't want my dadgum pork ribs tasting like chicken, Bob says. Kurt calls in from PA, having come up with a term for the Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade before they were the Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. To Bob's delight, Kurt calls them Bliss Ninnies. Editorial: Bob would have loved to give Kurt a cowbell at this point, but alas, 10 years ago, there was no cowbell to be found in the Horn Studios. Bob ends the show writhing about Reverend Pastor Governor Mike Huckabee's recent fatwa to amend the Constitution of the United States to make it conform with the living Word of God. Before closing, Bob thanks John Fox for fixing everything around here that goes crunk, which makes next up host Peter Godbold laugh uncontrollably, causing him to delay the start of his program. And that's a look back, 87,000 hours back, for This Day in Horn History. Quick question coming in from our buddy Steve in Georgistan, who says, I'm still alive and well. Still have to keep my leg elevated, Steve says. Listening on Ace's stream via the Xbox One, it's loud and proud. Going to a wound specialist on Wednesday. Hopefully I'll be rounding the corner soon. I sure hope so. Steve also asks, will trackless truffles cure a leg burn? You know, usually I say it'll do anything you believe it'll do, but no, I think in this case we'd go for some not alternative medicine, but real medicine, because of course, alternative medicine that works, you know, the other name for that is medicine. So go to the doctor. Go to the doctor. Oh, really? More troubles? Let me see here. Oh, for pity's sakes. Well, I thought I had all the website stuff squared away. Apparently I don't, so I'll have to deal with that. Oh well. But anyway, that pretty much takes care of all the shilly-shallying that we have to do at the front end of the program. And hopefully we will knock down the fundraising goal this evening and go boldly from there forward into the week. Note coming in early on from our buddy Ron in Raleigh, subject line, delusion. I'm sure you've heard about Bishop Willard's pushback against Dolt 45's racist comments concerning Africa and Haiti. It said that Trump's statement was inconsistent with America's history and antithetical to American values. This from a man who, well into adult life, was a member of a church whose basic tenets were racist. Are these folks delusional? How is what Trump said in the least inconsistent or antithetical? Did these people grow up in the same country that I did? Speaking of Bishop Willard, he has indicated he will run for Orrin Hatch's Senate seat. He was governor of Massachusetts. Now he wants to be the senator from Utah. He seems to gallivant about the country, running for office wherever he alights. Does he do this to serve the people or aggrandize himself? It's all for Ann and Rafalka, okay? It just is. But that's, you know, as we mark this Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday, it is beneficial, I think, to note that there isn't anything antithetical about, well, no. Let's face it, for the vast majority of the history of this nation, Donald Trump's racism is consistent with, not inconsistent with, is thetical, not antithetical, to how this country has been. No one has done a better job today of pointing out the hypocrisy of right-wing politicians, white-wing politicians, than Samantha Bee. She went over and found, for instance, Mike Pencilneck Geek's MLK post. She went over and found Paul Ryan's post, etc. Steve King's. And then hoisted them on their own petards so as to point out the fact that, yeah, they're racists. It's not just a Trump problem. And on this day of all days, we would do well to recall that it's not just a Trump problem, that racism didn't rear its ugly head inside the Republican Party the minute that Trump's hand came off the Bible just 360 days ago. Racism runs through the Republican Party like like filth through a sewer, because it is at the heart and the very core of their policy making. There's no getting around it. And there is an abundance. There's an absolute abundance of evidence to prove it. Whether it be mainline politicians, or whether it be, you know, ordinary folks out on the street. For instance, over the weekend, Mike Pence had a bit of a rough time of it. In Largo, Maryland, Mike Pencilneck Geek went to church at the Metropolitan Baptist Church and had to sit there quietly in the pew while the pastor there, Dr. Maurice Watson, called out Donald Trump for his racism. He had to sit right there and listen as Dr. Watson said, "I stand today as your pastor to vehemently denounce and reject any such characterizations of the nations of Africa and of our brothers and sisters in Haiti. And I further say, whoever made such a statement, whoever used such a visceral, disrespectful, dehumanizing adjective to characterize the nations of Africa, whoever said it is wrong, and they ought to be held accountable." WUSA Channel 9 Action News Live team coverage, whatever, had followed the vice president to the church and reported that Pence became visibly red-faced at times throughout the speech. This, even though the minister never even so much as spoke the name of the white supremacist presently occupying the White House. How about that? So, that's where we find ourselves on this MLK Day holiday. But, you know, like I said, mainline politicians all the way down to folks on the street. And if you want maggots on the street examples, as our buddy Todd in South Carolina has pointed out on a number of occasions, you really can't go wrong by tuning in C-SPAN's Washington Journal in the mornings. It's early in the day. The maggots meds haven't really fully kicked in yet, and they're up and scurrying around. Well, kind of like cockroaches on a nasty kitchen floor before you flip the lights on. Larry, who got us started fundraising-wise just a couple of minutes ago, thank you, Larry, says, "You can tell someone is a racist white Republican when they meet an African-American, shake their hand and say, 'By the way, I'm the least most racist person you'll ever meet, and several of my closest friends are black.'" Well, yes, that's what we call a clue. Yes. And so, no real difference this morning, as Pedro Echevarria fired up the Washington Journal today and took a call from Laura from Spokane, Washington. Laura from Spokane, take it away.
View of race relations on this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, 202-748-8000 for those of you in the Eastern and Central time zones, and it's 202-748-8001 in the Mountain and Pacific time zones, and Twitter available to you too at C-SPAN WJ. From Spokane, Washington, Laura is next. Hi.
Hi. It's good to see you, C-SPAN. You always do such a good job. But my comment is that We struggled a lot with race relations, and Martin Luther King was a man that gave us all some sanity and some respect for each other regarding, you know, the color, don't color, judge a man by the color of his skin, but the content of his character.
What did I tell you? It's the only line white people know about Dr. King. Well, not white people, white Republicans. Okay, Republicans. You get my meaning.
Regarding, you know, the color, don't color, judge a man by the color of his skin, but the content of his character, you know, and that's been a guiding principle for me all of my life. And I have not had to hate very many people because of it. I get mad at them, but and I'm very grateful for that. But it wasn't until Obama got into office that all this stuff started stirring up, and now there's even slave trade started in Africa. And it's just sad, and but the Muslims are hunting down the black Africans and selling them, and that's because they were armed and financed by the last administration. Our black people today are working.
Our black people today are working, and of course there are several. See what I meant about getting up and getting on the phone before the meds kick in. She repeats the tired, old, disproven, tropes that, the black people were responsible. They enslaved themselves and sold themselves to African Portuguese people and African Dutch people, and that's how slavery. By the way, Clarity pointing out that Spokane is closer to Portland and is close to Portland in whiteness. They arrested a white supremacist who tried to bomb a parade route a few years ago. I remember that, a backpack bomb. Obama funded the terror. You've got that right. Obama funded the terrorists who, yes. I probably should have issued a cowbell warning, I'm guessing. And it's my fault for not doing that, so. There's another minute or so left. You might want to go ahead and get the hockey puck.
Black Africans and selling them, and that's because they were armed and financed by the last administration. Our black people today are working, okay? They have the highest in history employment rate, and they're buying nice homes, and they're bouncing babies, and they're having a good life. And that's happened here. We had nothing before. I feel like people just use that card to build themselves up, to make themselves live a life, filthy rich, and then just stick their nose up and leave everybody else in the dirt.
So you're saying that all these issues when it came to race relations was a result of the last administration?
It most definitely, yes. Yes. He was elected. Okay, you say we're all racist, but he was elected by white people. Okay, not once. Twice, and nobody seems to think about that. Yes, he very much so. And the stuff going on in Africa, why he gave those people billions of dollars. Why can't he help those people in Africa?
Those people.
He knows it.
Okay, let's go to Richard, Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, let's don't. Yeah, I know. Aren't they just precious? Yeah, those people. Mm-hmm. And all of our race problems were created by Barack Obama because he said we're all racists. How can you even begin to approach the logic of that? I know. It's just. But this is, this is an all over America kind of thing. Then there's the mean-spirited side of it. The Detroit Free Press reporting the story of Jorge Garcia. 30 years Mr. Garcia has been in the United States. And up until this very moment, he was allowed to remain here because he was brought here as a child. And he has no criminal record whatsoever. He was 10 years old when he came. He was brought to the United States. And And today, the ICE police deported Jorge Garcia. Oh, did I mention that he was married and had a wife and two children? Immigration activist Eric Shelley, interviewed by the Detroit Free Press, said, "How do you do this on Martin Luther King Jr. Day?" It's another example of the tone deafness of this administration. If Jorge isn't safe, no one is safe. Well, no one's safe. It's just that some people are less safe than others. So how's his family going to survive? There aren't too many single wage earner families that are leading economically viable existences. Mama and two kids are going to have a hell of a time without daddy in the home. Gosh, I remember remember those public service ads we used to run about the value of fatherhood? Well, not if you're Jorge Garcia. Mr. Garcia had asked the ICE agents to just let him stay till Congress can pass a DACA law so that he'd have legal status. ICE said, "Hell no." And in a manifestation of profound restraint, he said, "I feel kind of sad. I got to leave my family behind, knowing they're probably going to have a hard time adjusting, me not being there for them for who knows how long. It's just hard." But, you know, Donald Trump and the hard, cancerous nod of dead-enders want these families broken up. Because they're not real families, and after all, Mr. Garcia probably comes from a shithole country. This is the brutality of Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, under God, amen. Yeah. What do you say about something like this? Do you recall maybe the Reverend Jeremiah Wright standing in the pulpit 9 years ago, making 10 years ago, making white people's livers quiver by saying "God damn America"? Well, right there's your "God damn America." A country that would do this to a decent human being and his family, his wife, his son, his daughter. Well, it doesn't need God to damn it, because it damns itself. One wonders how Mr. Garcia came to their attention. But come to their attention, he damned sure did. And so that family is shattered. And, you know, the Trumpansies, the maggots, Trump himself, they celebrate moments like this because we're making America white again. I mean, great again. So it is MLK Day, and in a way, this holiday is sort of dangerous to Dr. King's legacy from where I stand. Seems like this time every year I remark on the Santa Clausization of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You know, he was only 26 years old when he started organizing the, I think he was 26 when he started organizing the Montgomery bus boycotts. And throughout the time that he was active and alive, among white people, the poll numbers ran about the same. About 33% of white Americans approved of Dr. King's activities, and two-thirds did not. And one of the other one of the other things that comes to mind on this observation of his birth is that it happens at a time when there are full-throated defenses of the Federal Bureau of Investigation being mounted, mostly by Democrats. A very few Republicans. Most of those defenses being mounted because we're hoping that the FBI might be of some use in helping this country to rid itself of the cancer inside the White House. I saw a great editorial cartoon Geezer Disgustus's physical exam Friday. It showed him, you know, nothing particularly graphic, but naked on all fours on a doctor's exam table with the doctor shining a flashlight into his mouth and a projection of a swastika appearing out of his ass on the wall behind him. Just sort of captured the moment, I thought. But we would do well on this holiday to remember that the FBI, under that nasty, vile, dictator, J. Edgar Hoover, literally tried to convince Dr. King to kill himself. Shortly after the rally on the National Mall in August 1963, the FBI sat up and said, FBI Domestic Intelligence Chief William Sullivan 2 days later wrote a memo in which he said, "We must mark him now, if we have not done so before, as the most dangerous Negro of the future in this nation from the standpoint of communism, the Negro, and national security." This is the kind of history that makes some people a little squeamish about just jumping in and hollering yay hooray for the FBI, because it has a very real history of abuse and abuse of power. And one hopes that the modern FBI has somehow learned its lesson over the years and that they won't and don't do this sort of thing anymore. But because of the secretive nature of their actions, there's no real way of knowing that. And you just have to take it on faith. I don't do faith very well. But in the aftermath of that memo in 1963, the FBI mounted a massive domestic spying campaign on Dr. King. Most people know this, but it's good to be reminded. And so with that surveillance operation came reams of tapes. The FBI was hoping to maybe, you know, catch Dr. King whistling the Internationale one day while tying his shoelaces or something like that. Instead, what they wound up doing was spying on his extramarital liaisons. And so they stitched together some of their greatest hits, put them in a box, and accompanied it with a letter, typewritten, that attempted to appear as though it had been written by another person of color. It read as follows: King, in view of your low-grade, abnormal personal behavior, I will not dignify your name with either a Mr. or a Reverend or a Doctor. And your last name calls to mind only the type of king such as King Henry VIII and his countless acts of adultery and immoral conduct lower than that of a beast. King, look into your heart. You know you're a complete fraud and a great liability to all of us Negroes. White people in this country have enough frauds of their own, but I am sure they don't have one at this time that is anywhere near your equal. You are no clergyman, and you know it. I repeat, you are a colossal fraud, and an evil, vicious one at that. You could not believe in God and act as you do. Clearly, you don't believe in any personal moral principles. No greater white fraud than Dr. King. This is the mid-1960s. Remember Billy Graham's preaching? Oral Roberts is going around holding tent revivals. But they weren't, in the words of this letter, a bigger fraud than Dr. King. King, like all frauds, your end is approaching. You could have been our greatest leader. You, even at an early age, have turned out to be not a leader, but a dissolute, abnormal, moral imbecile. We will now have to depend on our older leaders like Wilkins, a man of character, and thank God we have others like him. But you are done. Your honorary degrees, your Nobel Prize, what a grim farce, and other awards will not save you. King, I repeat, you are done. You know, you can almost hear J. Edgar Hoover dictating this, can't you? Now, there's no proof that J. Edgar Hoover did it, but you just can. Maybe sitting there dressed up like Vivian Vance. No person can overcome facts, not even a fraud like yourself. Lend your sexually psychotic ear to the enclosure. You will find yourself, and in all your dirt, filth, evil, and moronic talk, exposed on the record for all time. I repeat, no person can argue successfully against facts. You're finished. You will find on the record for all time your filthy, dirty, evil companions, male and females, giving expression with you to your hideous abnormalities, and some of them to pretend to be ministers of the gospel. Satan could not do more. What incredible evilness. It is all there on the record, your sexual orgies. Listen to yourself, you filthy, abnormal animal. You're on the record. You have been on the record. All your adulterous acts, your sexual orgies extending far into the past. A lot of references to orgies here. This one is but a tiny sample. You will understand this. Yes, from your various evil playmates on the East Coast to blank, and others on the West Coast and outside the country, you are on the record. King, you are done. The American public, the church organizations that have been helping, Protestant, Catholic, and Jews, will know you for what you are, an evil, abnormal beast. So will others who have backed you. You are done. King, there is only one thing left for you to do. You know what it is. You have just 34 days in which to do this. Exact number has been selected for a specific reason. It has definite practical significance. You are done. There is but one way out for you. You better take it before your filthy, abnormal, fraudulent self is bared to the nation. They delivered it to his home. They delivered it to his wife, Coretta Scott King, who, to her credit, knowing what they were up against, understood the source. And it didn't take Dr. King and his closest advisors very long to figure out that it was an FBI job, and that they had been wiretapping him and bugging hotel rooms and bugging his home for God only knows how long. He was so terrifying to J. Edgar Hoover. The idea that people of color would demand actual access to constitutional rights on the same level as white folks, that they were willing to kill over it. Larry making an observation. If there was any poetic justice, the FBI would do to Trump and Pence what they did to King, I'm sure, and a few others. I have no moral issues with wishing for and saying that either. I don't mean bugging their offices. I don't know what you mean, Larry, and I'm not going to speculate. But one of the more ironic statements to come out, ironic and moronic statements to come out of the whole shithole gate controversy, have to append gate to something if it's going to be an official Washington scandal, so it's shithole gate, was the tweet that Tangerine Tiberius sent out saying, in the future, maybe I'd better record all of our conversations. My initial thought was, well, sunshine. You don't really have to worry about that, because Robert Mueller probably has so many many people wired walking around you that it comes into the receiving center in glorious octophonic stereo, if that's what the word would be. Echoes from all. But one wonders. One wonders if Bob Mueller has taken that step. And what would that mean for the Republic? So here we are. Fifty years on, coming up on the 50th anniversary of his murder. And the people who continue to carry the flame, who picked it up from Dr. King, metaphorically speaking, are the people who, like King in his own era, are the most reviled by white power structures. I dare say that there is no one on earth who is more hated by the President of the United States himself than Colin Kaepernick, and the as well as the Black Lives Matter movement. That is, of course, why they have been so thoroughly vilified by him. And that is why the maggots shriek, "All lives matter." And that is why they're having a hissy over the story that, yes, if players kneel at the Super Bowl during the national anthem, they will be shown on camera. I received a press release the other day. I get a lot of them from the right wing is much better at trying to spread their opinion makers than our side is. So my email is flooded with pitches for right wing freaks and fools. And the invitation was for me to invite this particular clown on the program and let him, and him, of course, is a former military captain or subaltern or what the fuck ever, to fulminate about how those Negroes don't value America's military sacrifices and Christians, God-loving people with guns. And that's the trope that they're pushing. The idea that somehow kneeling during the national anthem is, as we've gone over in the past, that somehow this is a slur against the military, when it never was and never will be. It is a silent protest calling America to heed what Lincoln called the better angel, the better angels of its nature, and to pay attention to issues of police brutality on people of color in this wayward country. And to not give in to its most base impulses. Appearing on a BuzzFeed podcast alongside New Jersey Senator Cory Booker today to talk about the what Dr. King did for America and how his efforts shaped the future as it developed. Representative John Lewis of Georgia, a genuine hero, and I'm not going to append of the civil rights movement, no, an American patriot, period. Said that he was flying from Atlanta back to Washington, D.C., and as he walked down the aisle of the plane, he said, "I was on a flight from Atlanta, and I'm walking down the aisle, and the gentleman said as loud as he could, 'Trump!' So I didn't. I just kept walking. I didn't say anything." And sometimes I'm walking in the airport in different places. I guess they think they're getting to me or harassing me, but they don't understand. I've been called many, many things. But I'm not going to let anything get me down. I'm going to keep walking. Keep moving. Trump! Yeah. So, just a, you know, just a, an overview of this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Earlier today, Trump took to the Twitter. Can you imagine we pay him to do that? We do. "Senator Dickie Durbin totally misrepresented what was said at the DACA meeting. Deals can't get made when there's no trust. Durbin blew DACA and is hurting our military." Uh, Sister Carol Baker, who from time to time gets on the Caratine Caligula's back and rides him like a borrowed mule, responded, "Dick Turbin is the only one who's unfailingly stuck to his original story, making it more believable. At least he didn't blow Putin. So there's that." He blew Doc. I know. Carol keeps wondering, what do I got to do to get banned by this guy, to get blocked by this guy? But it's, you know, it's true. So that's pretty much the filibobster. I want to share a couple of emails. Flavio with a question. Is it true that J. Edgar Hoover was one part black and two a cross-dressing closeted gay man? The goddess of irony never sleeps. No, she doesn't. And it probably is true. There are people who have tracked down his family tree. And yes, there is a person of color back there. And if you look at early photographs of him, there's some appearance similarities. Subject line: breaking up immigrant families. Scott and Punky say they're just compensating for history. They know full well that they can't sell off individual family members to a neighboring plantation, so they do the next best thing. They deport the family members they're able to. Sorry, but we're still a racist nation. We've never stopped being a racist nation. The methodologies have changed over the years, of course. But we have never to this day dealt with fully dealt with the great crime that was founding this nation on the backs of stolen lives. We've made, dare we say, progress, some limited progress. But that moral arc is still bending. And in something as big as the universe, it's a long, slow curve. And just from an art of word-knowing standpoint, you know, Dr. King said the moral arc of the universe bends toward justice. He didn't say it gets there. He didn't say to justice, he said toward. And that and he was a word knower too, and knew exactly what he meant. It bends in the direction of. But like lessons from plane geometry, a line extends infinitely unless there is a defined terminus. So all the prattling from the Paul Ryans and the Steve Kings and the Ted Cruzes and the Mike Pences, it don't come to nothing, because they are hollow words uttered by hollow men who have no intention of doing anything whatsoever to make that arc continue to bend toward justice. In the bleak, privileged souls of the likes of Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan and Steve King and Mike Pence and Donald Trump, everything's just fine. we don't have any problems of race, because no problems of race and ethnicity touch them. And that is the standard by which they move, they judge the movement. The curve of that moral arc is whether or not they are harmed. So that's the filibobster. I had a note earlier, and I wanted to share it because we haven't heard from him for a while. Paul from Parts Unknown. Sorry I've been out of contact. Work's been long and grueling, and I spent almost the entire month of December working in another state, living in a hotel room on the company's dime, so no access to a kitchen to make the Palmans at the holidays this year. So I would like to submit a challenge for the last week of President Trump's first year. The Trump Driving You Nuts Challenge. Huh? Clever, huh? Yes. Paul from Parts Unknown's Trump Driving You Nuts Challenge. I would like to offer the latest product from Horn Labs, Precious Palmans. This product is a breakthrough in nutrition technology. Palmans are gluten-free, vegan, and artisanal. They are so nutritious that when you pop one in your mouth, the world seems sane for the very few seconds that you're eating them. Disclaimer, experience will vary from customer to customer. Sanity is subjective and is not guaranteed by Horn Labs, at Horn Labs on Twitter. Previous test subjects can give testimonials to how powerful Precious Palmans are. People like Carol Baker, Ferg, Agnes, and even Bob himself. For the low, low price of a generous contribution to the Horn of $40 or more, you can receive your very own tin of Precious Palmans, the first non-imaginary product from Horn Labs. We have 3 tins available. Place your order with the address you would like them sent to with Bob Kincaid while supplies last. Precious Palmans, the food is non-imaginary. The promised effects of eating them are. Happy 2018, Paul from Parts Unknown. And that's no joke. They're yummy. And if you want to kick in $40 or more, the first 3 people who do that, I send your name to Paul. He prepares them. He ships them. You get them. You munch on them. You love them. And then you'll be part of the Palmans, the happy few who have enjoyed Palmans, courtesy of Paul from Parts Unknown. The first ever real Horn Labs product. That's beautiful. Thank you, Paul. And if you're finally back home and out of that hotel room, and I take it you are, welcome back. I know you were missed. So, like I said, there are only 3. There can be only 3. And first come, first served. A $40 contribution or more. And if we did that this evening, those 3 would take care of, it would leave only $70 to go in fundraising for the evening. So let's take a break and see where the program's going to take us. And if you want to engage in conversation, of course, you know how I trust. 304-574-8178. And from Skype, anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And the first 10 of Palmans is gone. Michael in Madison, who has enjoyed them before, says, I need my Palmans fix. And, there goes tin number 2. This is happening quickly. Meanwhile, there goes tin number 3. So that was fast. Thank you, Paul, from Parts Unknown. Thank you very kindly. So, wow. I mean, well, the Paulmans have a, they have a following, to say the least. So, break time. Jump in if you want to engage in some conversation and make conversation radio what it's meant to be. Clarity pointing out, a prophet is never popular if they're a true prophet. Malcolm X, Jesse Jackson, the younger Muhammad Ali. Jesse Jackson in his younger days, yes, I understand. Absolutely true. Okay, break time. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Living in the wasteland of the free. Running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss them people's ass. You may call me old-fashioned, that don't fit my picture of a true democracy. It feels like I am living in the wasteland. Kids with guns fighting inner city wars. So what do? We put these little kids behind prison doors. We call ourselves the advanced civilization. That sounds like crap to me. Feels like I am living in the wasteland. Got high school kids. wasteland of the dream. While we sit gloating in our greatness, just as a saint by another sea, living in the wasteland of the
the one and only Iris DeMent, Wasteland of the Free. I wonder if in current parlance, I wonder if maybe there might be a reboot, the Shithole of the Free. It would work. Same syllables, it'd scan, and it would be damned well true. Michael in Madison said, holy crap, Springsteen tickets don't go that fast. The Pullmans go in a hurry, described by one Pullman aficionado as so good they make you want to slap grandma. Indeed, indeed, indeed. So as soon as the program's over, I'll get these three addresses over to Paul. And thank you, Paul, for thinking of us. And, you know, just so you'll know, what these really are artisanal. If he was not busy doing what else he does in parts unknown, these things could be huge. But the fact of the matter is, they are labor-intensive. Every one of these almonds is peeled by hand. I mean, you could probably sell these at the Rainbow Grocery in San Francisco next to the raw, unfiltered water for God only knows what. Mm-hmm. Yum, yum, yum. Yeah, Anatole, you're right. That song is so poignant today. Indeed it is. Okay, so let's run over. And check in, see what's on Jim's mind this Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday. Hey, Jim.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How about you?
Oh, I'm here. I hope you and your family had a good weekend.
Pretty good, pretty good. Either we're getting used to it or it just wasn't quite as brutally cold.
Well, it looks like it's going to get a little bit better. I hope so.
Well, but not before tomorrow night, it's not.
So I've been told.
Yeah,
so Alexa tells me.
The snow starts shortly before sunrise, continues all day long, overnight low tomorrow night of 8, overnight low Wednesday of 11.
Ain't it grand?
Oh, I tell you what, don't leave the brass monkeys out.
Yeah. Listen, in acknowledgement of today, I wish you and your listeners a meaningful Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It means a lot to me. It always has. And I will never forget, I don't know if it was Dr. King or one of his followers who said, if you cannot run, you walk. If you cannot walk, you crawl.
That's about the size of it. Got to go. It's like that old saying, you know, climb or die.
Exactly. And so basically, that's the kind of spirit we have to take in this, you know, day and time in which we live, this nightmare. And I'm not even interested in what the blonde-haired Tiberius has had to say. I could care less. To tell you the truth, I've gotten so tired of all of that stuff. I don't even, when I get in my news feed, I don't even paste it back on my own web, site. I just don't. It's so outrageous.
Well, the problem, Jim, is that, like I said, we are 5 days away from 1 year. And maybe you see it differently, but damn, it feels like this year has been five.
Oh God, 5, 10.
Do I hear 15? But yeah, then we're in agreement. And a certain amount of fatigue attaches to that. And you know, that's why I try to clown around a little bit with the bullshit nutritional supplements and ASA kicking in with this day in horn history. Just a little something to lighten things up a little bit, because if all we do is stew in an outrage soup of Trump's viciousness and hate and petty vindictiveness and ignorance and stupidity, what's going to be left of us?
Well, that's what they want you to do. And so the only thing you can do is to be extremely brave and, you know, try to make as light of it as you can. And if you can possibly do so, share as less of the misery that you can. I mean, the misery index is so high right now.
Is it really? I haven't seen a reference to it in a while.
Oh, I haven't heard misery index in a long time. But they used to use that back in the 80s and the 70s. I remember that. And I don't think it's been really brought out as any type of metric. But, you know, the misery index, I think, is extremely high among a lot of people. That being said, about domestic problems and the fact that we're approaching an ongoing shutdown because of DACA and stuff like that. Yeah, there are two more things that we get off here. One is the situation in San Salvador. I mean, what he wants to do is to send these people back to horrible situations. And this is the same thing that happened back in the 1939 when the St. Louis was turned back.
It is. With only a slight shift in that which makes the situation so tragically dangerous, yes.
I mean, it is. I mean, you're sending a lot of people back to an extremely unpleasant situation in life from which they had tried to escape, from which they will be returned to almost either enslavement, death, or imprisonment. And that's exactly what happened to these people who happened back in 1939, who were trying to respect the then doctrine of immigration. Well, we turned them back, didn't we? And we're turning back again.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other story that is floating around out there happened on Saturday. The fake... No, I don't want to use that word. The improperly disseminated ballistic missile warning in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it was, well, this couldn't possibly be true. But, when the story broke. But then after it was discovered to have been a mistake, the stories began coming out about how people responded to it. They took it seriously. It said, you know, this is not a drill.
Of course they did. This is the worst thing since that 1938 thing since War of the Worlds. Like, compare it to. I mean, what would you do if all of a sudden...
Well, the heart-rending video of parents putting children into, down manholes into storm drains.
Yeah, a Type A missile is on its troop. Hello? Good luck. BYOB.
And KYA. KYAGB.
And all the other acronyms that go with all the horror of these things. They're just so ridiculous. And this guy was just a few keystrokes away from it. One person was, and they did not have a backup system in place. Now, you would have thought that, I don't know who, if it's a federal, state, or whatever, I assume it's federal, that they would have assumed the possibility of having a plan B in case there were, because all kinds of things can fly across the horizon, and people do make mistakes, and they only had one guy at the keyboard.
Yeah, oh, okay, but wait a minute. I mean, you have some, you have military experience and chain of command experience and things like that.
Yes, sir.
How in the hell do you reckon it is, from a systems standpoint, that log off system is next to the click for send out nuclear ballistic missile alert?
I can't answer that question. I wish I could.
It doesn't add up, Jim.
No, sir.
I'm not trying to go all Alex Jones on us or anything.
No, but you have to have redundancy, and you have to have backups and stuff like this, because we know that that whole area of the Western United States has been extremely aware of the possibilities of a Type A missile being launched, or even mislaunched. I mean, even Kim Jong-un might make a mistake and send something he didn't want to send. And if we can't bring it down, these people, they have less than 38 minutes. In reality, it would be less than 25.
Well, at 38 minutes, I was surprised there was that much of a window.
Considering the length of time in that part of the world, it's not going to be like one coming from the USSR or the former USSR. It's going to be much less. It'd probably be 15, 20 max if we could not bring it down. And we do not have the appropriate response systems to do that in spite of what they tell you. We simply do not.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, and I guess other people are too, but the explanation that was offered in the aftermath seemed too facile by half, Jim. It was a shift change mistake. Really? I mean, it...
I'm sorry, we have a problem here. What did you just say? Excuse me.
No, it just the idea that it was some sort of shift change mistake seems too simple. I understand that simple explanations are most often the correct ones, Occam's razor and all of that. But, I mean, I can't...
I mean, Bob,
I can't fathom how that works.
We applaud all of these computer systems and all these mechanical systems and all of these default systems that are supposed to work, but they are at the control of human beings who have to go take a leak, they want to have a cup of coffee, or they are changing shifts, and when you change shifts, you've got all types of documents that you have to sign for, and you've got all types of accountability statements that you are on duty from A to B. It's just like what they used to do in the old missile silos. Ain't no difference. It's just the same thing in reverse. Except, you know, sending them, they're looking for them. That's the way I see it. Maybe I'm wrong. And there's one other thing I just want to surface with you, because I know you got a lot of people want to talk. And low-yield nuclear weapons, the latest Pentagon expenditure. They can make them so low and so less harmful.
Right. They're trying to come up, and you know, I talked about this maybe like early last week or sometime. They're trying to come up with nuclear devices that are small enough that, you know, they could just let Donnie put, you know, he could just let one off.
Ain't no such thing, darling. I mean, these people, I mean, they went over this whole thing with tactical nukes.
Yeah.
And once you release a tactical nuke, you're going to release a strategic nuke. Because one breeds the other. And but yet they're talking about, well, we could just let one go. That will let her so much. And that will just get their attention. And that
Is it possible, and I'm getting a little paranoid here, and I recognize it, and I don't like it when I go start working the same corner that Alex Jones works. But could this have been a Trump administration false flag that got outed before it could be fully made fully operational?
I don't know. Can you imagine if there were a closed system of the thoughts that are going on inside of that administration and the thoughts that are being hurled back and forth as well as the actual words? I mean, if anything goes. I mean, it's just like, as far as I'm concerned, it's total bedlam in there. And I've been going through this book, this Fire and Fury, over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I just have to put it down. I pull it up on Kindle, and I don't want to waste that much money on a paperback book. God knows I've got too many books I can't even pull where I've got. You probably know that from the emails I've sent you. But nonetheless, I thought, my God, I cannot believe some of the stuff this guy is leading to. And I just have to put it down. I really do. And see exactly how tied our country is into so many devilish things. And this business of a low yield nuclear weapon. Don't you believe that thing is going to create a lot of jobs and a lot of places that are going to tell you, oh, well, you know, you live over in A, I live over in B, but if I drop one on you, it's not going to hurt me. In the world can you think of even conceiving of that concept when you know where all that stuff's going to go and you know how dirty those bombs are, because none of those bombs are clean anymore if they were ever clean in the first place. They just developed isotopes. I guess the most humane thing is a neutron bomb. Well, it won't take as much real estate, but it sure would kill all the people who's there.
There's just, I mean, and again, I like to be fact-based, but there's something that seems not right about all of this, and that's all I can say. It's a feeling, and I don't like going on feelings. But as Asa points out here a couple of minutes ago, okay, let me take a stab at this. How come shift change ballistic missile confusions didn't happen when Obama was in charge?
Who knows?
And moreover, I mean, Jim, do you know? I mean, is this like, you know, some just 911 call center guy person? Who runs this, or is that a or was
they
that...
have stripped so many federal employees from these agencies that they don't have the adequate manpower to maintain our systems as they are supposed to be?
Well, but what I was asking is this a military operation? Who's in charge of issuing these things?
It's President Trump.
No. I mean, out there in Hawaii, at that center, whoever it was that pushed the wrong button, who, you know, what kind of position was that person occupying?
I'm not sure if he was with which federal agency that is assigned to oversee this, or if he were a contractor who had been played by another contractor. Who knows? Because the way they hire people these days is so goddamn complex, you can't understand who works for whom and who's trying to make the most buck off a pair of these people for the least decent salary. I mean, that's the thing about this contract situation with the military. I mean, and whoever oversees the contracting office representative, I mean, you get what you pay for. I don't know who this guy was. Was he a state civil servant? Was he a contract employee of TSA or DOD? Who was he?
I don't know the answer to that, and that's
I don't either. And I'm just trying to figure it all out. How the fuck can this happen? He's not French. And it would take him 38 minutes to reconcile a situation like that. Now, play this. If this thing had been transmitted back to D.C., that they felt that there was an inbound warhead to Hawaii, what, considering reaction time, would have happened? We're talking about 15 minutes here.
I realize.
I mean, I'm not trying to take up more of your time. What I'm trying to emphasize here is actions like this are a force multiplier. And they execute themselves with extreme, exponential quickness. I mean, this is a warning. I mean, we might not be warned a second time. This is how quickly things can develop in a situation like this. And particularly when you have DJ Trump as the guy who has the hand on the switch.
Well, we're getting something in the way of an answer. Sparky just sent this along. The Hawaii worker who pressed the wrong button has been reassigned. Civil defense employee feels terrible about the situation. A two-step process is in place to send out alerts. The person was reassigned but not fired. The worker had been completing a shift change at the time of the alert, and according to the Washington Post, was using a drop-down menu that gave two similar options, test missile alert and missile alert. Instead of selecting a system test, the worker set a real alert.
Well, that'll tell you something about their system that I hope they've corrected.
Yeah, I mean, you know, test missile alert, order pizza. You know, it's just all on the same drop-down menu.
Would they not have some type of redundancy? Is this real, or is this whatever? Apparently, it just didn't work. And that shows you how much our own system had been degraded. They really have been. So very seriously. And how less seriously the Pentagon is trying to exhibit these new staff study reports on low-yield nukes. That has got to be the craziest goddamn thing I have ever heard of in my life.
Oh, and the other thing that came out over the weekend, I'd made mention of the big CD, or not big, but the CDC, convocation over how to be prepared for a nuclear attack.
No way.
And that, no. I mean, it was going to happen tomorrow. They announced it. They publicized it. And everybody went, whoa. And they got embarrassed. And now the damn thing's been either postponed or canceled.
Wonder why.
Because I guess it embarrassed the Trump administration because it meant that it looked like the CDC was saying that, you know, there's a chance he's going to get a nuclear war started here.
Bob, I tell you, when I worked at the Pentagon, I told a lot of people, they would say, what would you do if it happened? I said, what the fuck could you do? Let's hope it will be in the warmer months when I could be at the Ground Zero hot dog stand enjoying a hot dog. And that's where I exactly want to be. Yeah. I mean, you know, people don't realize how little things start bigger things, or little fleas have bigger fleas, and so ad infinitum. Correct?
Yeah.
Anything pleasant on the horizon before I go?
No, I don't. No, sadly, you know, the fact of the matter is, this world is at greater risk because of who the occupant of the White House is.
Of course, naturally, man's nuts. He's absolutely, if man is a march hare, and his temperament is so volatile. If I read into this book, Fire and Fury, I mean, I cannot imagine working in a place like that. I mean, I don't think even Hitler's chancellery was as bad as what I had been led to believe from what I had been reading. I mean, you can't tell anything except without a, you know, who's in, who's out, without a scorecard. And it all depends upon his mood and his particular feeling at that time. I mean, his temperament is so mercurial and so unpredictable that what he says at 11 o'clock is no longer valid at 11:07. And what he says at 11:07, it ain't shit by 11:15. I mean, that's how volatile and mercurial his temperament is. And in the meantime, I don't know what he tweeted today. I've just gotten tired of hearing about his tweets. And, you know, because they're all full of shit. And they're all just basically sound like a bunch of valley girls trying to hit back and forth with each other. If you can understand my analogy, okay?
Yeah, I do.
The guy's just not fit for office. And we talked about that before. But they're going to stick for that son of a bitch. If they can, they're going to try to stick with him and isolate him if he can be isolated. And I guess if they can isolate him, that would be a good thing. It will keep the rest of us from Armageddon or whatever. And if they could extract anything positive from him that will translate into reality, that's about all we can hope for right now until he's out of office. Because I do not foresee him being removed. I really don't. I think that is that's pie in the sky. They're not going to remove
it. Well, it's a tall order any way you slice it.
You got it.
I think the effort must continue. The issue must continue to be pressed.
Well, of course it must. But nonetheless, the more you press it, the more he's going to take efforts to negate it and this, that, and the other. I mean, he's going to have to do something that is so outrageous. And I cannot see this with the current Congress, be it in the House of Representatives or the Senate, to really do anything to defeat him. I mean, may I say this? He almost, at this point, is like the Teflon Don. no matter what he says, no matter what he does, hey, he's something else. He's butch. He's macho. You know, remember the way he used to control his campaign meetings? I've got my head on. And throw the bastard out.
Oh, you mean his Clavering rallies?
Yeah, exactly. And I understand that a substantial portion of his base is still right behind him.
Absolutely.
And I have a dear relative, and I love her dearly. We talk at least once a week, whatever. And on her Facebook thing, she has a picture of the White House that is enveloped in the flag.
Oh, Jesus.
And this lady is not stupid. But she is a barometer of what is out there. I mean, it would take, I don't know what to bring him down. That's just a... But nonetheless, I'm not trying to bring anybody down. I wish no man harm, whatever. You know, basically most of my Facebook is devoted to animals and animal cruelty. But when I see some of the stuff about Trump and some of the stuff that's been said as far as racial discrimination is concerned, it cannot be ignored because the man is a white supremacist. He is a racist, and he always has been, and he always will be.
There we go. There we go. Well, Jim, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Well, I'm going to have another shot and listen to the rest of your program and appreciate you for the time that you have afforded me tonight, sir.
Well, enjoy it and enjoy the little blast and stay warm, and well, we'll just see what the next hour and 15 minutes brings.
Well, all my best to your friend in Georgia who's suffering from cellulitis.
That was my understanding, yes.
Well, I hope he's got lots of Keflex and a lot of good medical care because you can't mess around with that.
No, you do not mess around with that, and he's being a good patient and doing as he was told.
He's a hell of a nice guy.
He is indeed.
I'll tell you one other person that I enjoy very much, and that's on your Friday night program, and that's Bill Rick.
Oh, Bilbo Rick's a great guy. Last Friday night was a hoot.
Yeah, I listened to it, and I always enjoy listening to him, and I sort of live through him vicariously. And he's always having a good time, and he has good, reliable, institutional information that you can make book on. And I'll salute him, too. And if you could pass that on to him, I'd appreciate it.
All right. I think you just did. Jim, take care and have a good night.
And to Bob, too, okay?
Will do. Thanks.
Out here.
Later. It's our buddy Jim calling from not too frozen far away from here. A couple of notes coming in during the course of the conversation. Bill in Allentown says, hey, Bob, subject line, Hawaii. I'm a bit more paranoid than you. I think there are people in Hawaii or low-level people saying, hey, Donnie, you want the whole country this crazy? there's obvious truth in that. And it just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. Yes, people make dumb mistakes, but really? Send a test missile alert, send alert, and then there's a second step. Are you sure you want to do this? Fuck it. I'm out of here. Shift change. That makes sense to you? Doesn't me. Jack in Shreveport says, so they're telling us that there's no confirmation dialogue like, are you sure after these menu choices? Come on. But according to the story that Sparky sent me, that's there. Are you sure? Yes. Meanwhile, under the subject line redundancy, Steve from Georgia Stan says, even if you delete a simple text document, you get a confirmation prompt before you can't, before you can chuck it into the recycle bin. And meanwhile, as with regard to removal, Steve notes, are you kidding me? The House of Representatives doesn't even have the balls to censure him. And, of course, censure is meaningless. I mean, it just is. But the whole Hawaii alert thing just stunk. Meanwhile, of course, Alex Jones has declared that it was done by Trump's enemies. But for once in my life, I felt like I was glad that the dumb bastard was actually playing golf and not paying attention. Because he made no mention of it whatsoever. Just nothing. Bupkis. God, if it had gotten to him, we might the mushrooms might already have started blooming all over the world. And that is a terrifying concept. Let's run over and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
How do you do?
I'm a doing.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's funny. Earlier, when you were talking about the seeing commercials for big Martin Luther King Day sales.
Yeah.
By retail establishments. Just as you were talking about that, I was typing up a post for my Facebook that also touched upon that. So apparently you're not the only one that's seeing these ads. And I personally would never, ever shop or patronize an establishment that is that callous. That it's just another big 3-day weekend holiday.
But that is, but Scott, that is how it became a holiday.
Oh, I know. It's bad enough that Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday have been combined. I remember as a kid, there used to be Lincoln's birthday and there used to be Washington's birthday. And now it's, what do they call it, President's Day.
Right, because, you know, Franklin Pierce, our biggest alcoholic president, wasn't getting enough love.
I don't get the reference.
Well, now it's just the day that we honor all presidents, not Lincoln, Washington,
yeah.
But, you know, Grover Cleveland and Rutherford B. Hayes.
And that one president that inspired the hoagie, the sub sandwich, Fillmore. I don't know if you called them Fillmore. Fillmore's where you grew up.
No, you learn something new every day. I never heard of them.
Yeah. Hoagies, footlongs, subs, and Fillmore's were the names given to those types of sandwiches.
Don't forget the hero.
Oh, hero. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
And, of course, the hero comes from the mispronunciation of G-Y-R-O.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's Grinders.
Oh, Grinders, yeah, I forgot. Kansas City was where I first heard that word grinder. I will always associate it with strippers, you know, exotic dancers and stuff. Oh, baby, that girl is one hell of a grinder. But Kansas City, there was a place, and actually I just read that it closed at the end of 2017. It was in the Westport neighborhood of Kansas City. It was called Mario's. Oh, God. They would take a big Ottoberg roll or whatever and hollow out the center of it and fill it up with meatballs and sauce and mozzarella cheese and plug up.
It. Oh.
Oh, God. I don't normally engage in food porn, but and they had a pasta salad that was to die for. And if you look up Mario's pasta salad, Westport, you can get the recipe online. It was so popular, they even posted the recipe of it, for it. But, oh, God, now I'm sorry I even brought it up. Kansas City's the only place I've ever lived where you could be sitting down to breakfast and the topic of discussion would be what's for lunch, what's for dinner. I mean, very food-oriented part of the planet. Geez, now my mouth is watering. But I had a thought on the occasion of the observance of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. But my thoughts, strangely, weren't so much about his birth, but more about his death and my memories of that event. As I recall, it happened on a Thursday. And this was April of 1968?
Yeah.
And back in those long ago days, I was a 13-year-old kid. I had a morning paper route carrying the Washington Post newspaper. Okay, so here we are at the very start of April of 68. Well, part of the duties of a newspaper carrier back then, you not only had to get up at the ass crack of dawn to carry the papers to all your customers, but once a month, at the end of the month, before the end of the month, you had to go to all the customers and get paid.
Yeah, and collect.
For having delivered the previous month's newspapers. Well, there were always people on the route, and I'm trying to think. I probably had about 40 customers on that route, which was not a small route. I mean, 40, you know, you had weekday subscribers, you had Sunday-only subscribers, and you had daily and Sunday subscribers. And back then, the Washington Post, for daily and Sunday home delivery, was $2.85. Jesus, you probably couldn't buy a copy off the newsstand of the weekday Post for less than $3, I'm imagining. But anyway, I would have people on the route who were what we call slow pay customers. They always had some cockamamie excuse as to why they couldn't pay you the first time or two that you showed up. And ironically, these people would be the same people who would raise 31 flavors of hell if the paper was left on the doorstep and it got wet, or if you didn't quite get it to their...
Yeah.
But, you know, never mind not paying the first time you drop by. But anyway, the Friday King was killed, you got to remember where this was 4 miles south of D.C., and parts of D.C. literally were in flames. I mean, burning the fuck down, okay? I later knew a guy who was a news reporter for WTOP radio in Washington, which at the time was an all-news station, and he got permission to go up to the top of the monument to survey all of the flames and smoke in the surrounding area. And, I mean, these neighborhoods were less than 10 blocks from the fucking White House.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That were burning all to hell. Well, anyway, he's up at the top of the monument, and he's, you know, reporting from up there somehow. And he notices on the south lawn of the White House is a machine gun nest. I don't know if there are pictures of it, but his veracity I would never question. And if he said he saw it, it was probably there. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's 4 miles north of where I'm going door to door collecting from my slow pay customers in April of 68. So I get to this one house on Adams Avenue. I could take you right to it. It was like a block and a half from where I grew up. And it looked dark inside, you know, walking up the walkway, but there appeared to be one light on in the living room. So I go up to the door, knock on the door, open the storm door, and then knock on the inside door. And it was one of these doors that had panes of glass about halfway up and lace curtains, you know, covering the panes of glass. Well, another little light goes on, and I see the curtain move back about 2 or 3 inches, and this face peering out at me. And then I hear the sound of a chain, a slide, a deadbolt, and God knows what other kind of lock being disengaged. And he opens up the door a crack, and I say, collect for the post, you know, in my happy little adolescent voice. He says, boy, what the hell are you doing out here? Don't you know what's going on? So he invites me in, all right, and he's standing there, and he's got a fucking holster on his right hip with the biggest damn pistol I had ever seen up till then. And across the room, propped up against a shotgun, which I assume is fully loaded.
And you're how old?
13.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, I just want to get paid and get the hell out of here, you know? But he's hemming and hawing and saying he didn't get to the bank that day and to come back in a couple of days. So I thanked him and, you know, he closed the door. And as I'm going down the steps, I hear the things getting re-engaged, you know, his security system. And I'm telling you, it was a sobering moment for me because I didn't know that people were that afraid in my own neighborhood. And I figure the guy was middle-aged back then. We're talking 50 years ago. So I doubt that he's still upright and above ground today. But if he is, he's probably got bigger and better armaments, and he's probably got more sophisticated locks on his door. And if you look, you might even see an old Trump sign, you know, stuck into his yard somewhere. You know, but that's the mindset of the Trump voter today. I didn't fully realize it was quite prevalent in some places back then, and it's only gotten worse in some places today. So I don't know what all that leads up to, but it's a memory that until I start drooling and dropping my food down the front of my shirt at some point in the not too distant future, it will stick with me forever, you know, under the heading fear-based people. So,
well,
I don't think I had ever seen a civilian with a gun at that age.
Yeah, but he was ready. He was ready if the riots came to his door, right?
Oh yeah, and he was sure that the black hordes were coming down his street any moment now. I mean, he had to be thinking that. Otherwise,
well, I mean, I take it you had collected from him in the past.
Yeah, but never. I was never greeted with him and his household being in that configuration. And he looked at me like I had, you know, stuff growing out of my head, you know, for being crazy enough to be out 4 miles south of Washington as it was burning the fuck down. I mean, and my thinking was, well, I guess a lot of folks will be home tonight, you know, so I could catch them, you know, the slow pays. God, right. I'll never forget that.
No,
I will never, ever forget that. It's one of those things that...
Well, the paper route was one of those eponymous kid jobs. And nobody, you know, back then, and nobody really understood how damnably hard it was. You know, because I don't know if you had to do it, but, you know, you got to get the papers, you got to roll the papers, you got to buy the rubber bands, you got to buy the little plastic bags, all of that stuff. And just being able to, if you're doing it on a bike, being able to throw them is an art in and of itself.
Well, see, that's the thing. I could never throw. And I learned this several years earlier when I was young, even younger, and had an afternoon paper out for the old Washington Daily News. I couldn't throw worth shit. So what I would always, it would take longer, but I would get off my bike, walk up the walkway, you know, put just kind of toss the paper onto the front with a rubber band around it. Or there were certain customers that wanted it between the storm door and the inside door, and they would always tip for that extra little bit of service. So I would remember those folks and do it just the way they wanted it, you know. And back then, the Washington Post Sunday edition, this was back when there was actual advertising in the paper, you could get a Washington Post Sunday edition that was easily 3 inches thick. I mean, you could, if you rolled one up real tight, you could beat someone to death with it without half trying, you know? I mean, and Sunday, you had to pull them in a wagon. You couldn't do it all on a bike, you know?
No, not if you had a big route.
No, and you had rain and snow and shit to contend with, and crazy, heavily armed customers. I mean, it's a wonder I lived through all that.
Well, but, you know, you did. And, you know, you wonder how long it took for your customer to put away his shotgun and his pistol.
Well, obviously afterwards, in the months afterwards, I would go, no pistol, no shotgun propped up against the piano. That was such an odd sight. You know, you associate a piano with happy sounds and melodic tones and family sing-alongs after supper. You never think of it as a parking place for a goddamn weapon, or at least I never did. But I don't remember the guy's wife too well, because it was one of those households where the wife didn't have a say when it came to anything, okay? The husband handled the money. The husband was the official spokesman for the group. You know, I don't think they had kids, as I recall. But, oh, man. I'm surprised I remember. I can tell you what he was wearing. He was wearing a pair of dark slacks and a red checkered, like a flannel a lumberjack shirt.
Oh, Jesus, he looked like that Johnny Carson character.
Yeah, the guy that gave the opposing view to the editorial, Floyd Turbo.
There's the name, yeah. And speaking of which, I just happened to notice that it was free on Kindle the other day, and I started reading the biography that Henry Bushkin wrote of Carson.
Oh, is that on there for free?
I don't know if it still is, but it was.
All right, I'll look for that.
Or maybe it was
maybe
it was because I'm a Prime member or something, like, you know, because I, you know, do Prime. I don't know.
Well, I will look for it, because I've been waiting to find that book.
Well, it's a real easy read.
There are other books ahead of it.
And it's compelling, and it's funny sometimes, and tragic, and Jesus, you know, but you know, the guy that America came to know as Bombastic Bushkin, was a real guy.
Henry Bushkin. But wasn't there an incident? This was when the Tonight Show was still in New York. Wasn't there an incident where after the show they went to some woman's house and there was gunplay involved?
Oh no, he tells that story.
I forget the particulars, but I remember somebody was carrying a pistol. I forget who though.
Among others, Carson carried one.
Oh, wow. Well, that doesn't surprise me. He was a rather tightly wound individual.
It's a heck of an interesting story. Just to watch how things like contract negotiations take place up in that rarefied atmosphere.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I
just heard of the time that Jack, when he had the Tonight Show. He was the host who was on, you know, before Carson took it over. And he had told a joke, okay, involving a water closet, which is a euphemism for a toilet, okay? And NBC censored the joke, and Jack Parr got upset and walked off during the program and left Hugh Downs, who was his Ed McMahon, to carry out the rest of the show. But Carson apparently one time got fed up with it, that he wasn't getting what he thought he should get for contract negotiations, and took a couple of weeks off, just went down to, you know, Fort Lauderdale or someplace and sat on the beach for 2 or 3 weeks until NBC came begging. Because he was responsible for a huge chunk of NBC's revenues back in those days. Yeah, I mean, even in the mid-60s.
Yeah, especially when the entirety of their broadcast schedule, except that, sucked.
Yeah, well, that's a perennial problem at NBC. You know, who can forget Fred Silverman's contribution to American culture in
the
70s?
Hello, Larry.
No, Super Train.
Well, yeah, Super Train and Hello, Larry.
Yeah. God, poor McLean Stevenson.
Yeah, Hello, Larry became a watchword for terrible television.
Yeah, yeah. And if McLean Stevenson had only known that MASH was his high point, he would never have left. He thought he would leave and discover new and better horizons in film and television. No,
that was not really. You know, that was an ensemble cast, and it brought out the best in everybody.
Yeah. Jeez. I heard a line the other day, which is still about media, but it's about local radio. Do you know the difference between a Clear Channel, or now it's called iHeart, but do you know the difference between your Clear Channel radio station and your McDonald's?
No.
The person behind the microphone announcing your order at McDonald's is live and local.
Nice. Very nice.
That sums up the state of radio in today's wretched world, except for this show, of course.
By the way, you just got a message from Asa.
Oh, no.
Three more days, Scott. Three
more
days.
I know. I noticed that on the calendar just last night. Well, you're going to get...
So what bumped it this past weekend? A Matlock marathon, Murder, She Wrote? I mean, what?
Dare I even mention the Wild Wild West?
Oh, God.
I'm starting to get tired of 77 Sunset Strip, and lately I've been recording Wild Wild West. I'll tell you the truth, Bob. I am seriously looking at dropping the TV portion of my cable service and just keeping internet and going semi-cordless or cord cutting.
Well, I mean, if you hook an antenna to your TV, can you get the local affiliate broadcasts? You know,
yeah,
local news and, you know, the weather for San Diego.
A couple of weeks ago, I reconfigured the living room and moved the TV antenna from where it had been to, I snaked a long coax around the perimeter of the room. So now the TV antenna is in the front window. And now I get everything. I even get stations that I would never watch. You know, a lot of the Spanish stations.
See, I bought an antenna that was, you know, I mean, granted, I'm not going to go to the hassle of putting something up on the roof or something like that. Just no. But I bought one that was supposed to bring in a signal from as far away as 55 miles. Not in the mountains, it doesn't.
No. How far are you from over the air TV stations?
The nearest one is 15 miles, and then and that's an ABC affiliate with one of the most delightfully bad news departments ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And then CBS and NBC and Fox are about 55, 60 miles away down in the valley.
Yeah, you could probably... Do you have a chimney?
No.
Oh. What type of roof? Flat or is
no,
there a peak to it?
It's pitched.
Yeah, you could probably get away with a halfway decent antenna on the roof. But see, after doing all that, what do you get for it? You get a clear picture if you get a picture, but the content sucks.
Right, that's why I'm saying it's not worth the effort. In the way back, they had an antenna here that was the line was run across the road and all the way up the mountain to bring in, you know, crappy TV.
Yeah.
But that's way pre-cable. And
now, I know that you have trouble with your internet provider. Is it the same company that offers cable television where you are?
No, the cable is a different company, and they are horrible and nastily expensive into the bargain.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking at alternatives. I'm a little skittish after my adventure with DirecTV Now, which they may have figured out how to run, but when I had it for the better part of a year, it was one technical issue after another, and I finally said,
hell
screw
with it.
I just don't need this anymore, you know. But there's this thing called PlayStation View, V-U-E, and I looked at the lineup, and they have a lot of the stations that I want at a fairly low price, and they have a 5-day or a 7-day trial. I may try that before I cut the cord, and if I can get it to work right, I may just say goodbye to UVerse except for internet, because I am buying stations that I would never, even if I were drunk, wielding the remote, I would not stop and look at those stations.
Well, one of the things that continues to frustrate is the fact that I hate the notion that whatever I'm paying in any wise goes into the provision of Electric Jesus channels.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that anything I pay for contributes to their ability to be on the air is deeply offensive to me.
Yeah.
And I told the cable provider one time, I said, look, you give me the ability to you find me a way to make sure that I'm never contributing in any way whatsoever to Electric Jesus Broadcasting, and you know, I might take your service, but until then, no, sorry.
Well, even with the over-the-air stations, the locally owned or the locally operating, I won't say owned, over-the-air stations, if you turn them on a Sunday morning, especially the independent stations, but even some of the network affiliates have a full complement of Jesus.
Oh, sure. And small stations still sell their time. I don't mm-hmm. know if they still do it, but for years and years and years, you could tune in this terrible local ABC affiliate on Sunday morning, and there'd be this woman who had the miraculous ability to sing in several keys at one time, none of which were the one the song was in, standing there with a guitar and, you know, hair up to Jesus and so much polyester in the room that if anybody lit a match, they would have got, the whole place would have gone up like flash paper. But standing there with her guitar, oh, Jesus, I love you better than pickled pig's feet. Oh, Jesus. And you sort of sit there and stare in stunned amazement at it, and you realize that this is how they're paying their low salaries to their poorly trained and poorly educated news staff.
Well, we've got a CBS affiliate, which is in the process. It's one of those rare broadcast outlets. It's AM, FM, and TV all under one ownership. And they recently announced that they're up for sale, and the sale is probably a few months away from being consummated. And what's going to happen is a new company is going to buy the TV, and then the AM and or FM will be spun off to yet another owner or owners. But the problem with this CBS affiliate, I used to like Bob Schieffer when he was on Face the Nation, okay? Well, he retired, and they've now got John Dickerson, who was Nancy Dickerson's son, who was one of the early, or if not first, female reporter on network news for CBS and then later NBC. And I've come to like his program. But the problem is this crazy local CBS affiliate will only air the first half hour of Face the Nation because they've sold time to one of these religious nuts, okay? And they show the second half of Face the Nation at something like 1 o'clock in the morning, in the wee hours of Monday morning, you know? So if I want to watch that, I've got to record it and then wait until the wee hours of Monday to see the whole damn thing, because I can never find it streaming online for reasons that are not clear to me, but I just never can. So I hope whoever buys the station, you know, has the good sense to run, you know, shift the religious broadcaster back an hour so that we can see the entire Face the Nation all at once. God, these are definitely first world problems that I've got.
Yeah, I mean, suffer quietly, Scott, okay?
Yeah, I can flip a switch and see the world in my living room. Meanwhile, I'm bitching about the price, you know?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, I've gotten far afield here, and three more days, eh? You're going to get an email from me in the not-too-distant future, and I know you say, yeah, I know. But you're going to get an email from me, and the memo, the heading is going to be, who had, you know, X date? Because I want whoever that is to win whatever money's in the pot.
Right.
For
yeah.
my...
Yeah, whatever. It'll be a three-month supply of whatever that evening's Horn Nutraceuticals bullshit nutritional supplement is.
Yeah, someone should at least benefit a little bit from my procrastination. And I can't help but think that one of the Steves, who we recently friended each other on Facebook, over the weekend was posting all kinds of stuff on Facebook about the wherever he was, the big Lebowski.
Oh, he was at he was at Dudathon in Columbus, yes. And that's Brother Usher Steve from up in New York. He went to Columbus for Dudathon.
Yeah, well, I figured it was on some level a subliminal poke in my ass, you know, to get the thing fired
Look,
up. And
we
watch
want
the damn
we want you in the damn cult, okay? We just want you in the cult. I mean, it's a lot more fun than the Moonies or the Hare Krishnas, or you know you don't have to. No, but you can just join the cult and you say, you know, you've got lines and everything, and you can make obscure references to things in the film, like the fact that I was one of the original I was one of the drafters for the Port Huron Statement, the original, not the the something second version, but
Yeah. Does anybody remember the Port Huron Statement?
Well, no, the fact that it's in that film, you know, I...
Well, I remember it was a minor plot point in the second season of Mad Men, the AMC series about the advertising business in the 60s. God, that was a great show. And we're coming up on Saturday, I guess, the 20th. Of the anniversary of the 10-year anniversary of the premiere of Breaking Bad. We are fortunate to live in a time when there, you know, we bemoan all the shitty television, but there is still some amazing television being made.
Yeah, I was one of the original authors of the Port Huron Statement, the original Port Huron Statement, not the compromised second draft.
Yeah.
That's the line.
Yeah. geez. We have lived through much history, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still unfolding. And it's good that we have you and the other fun lovers and truth seekers in the congregation to give a running commentary. See, and this is a great thing. They, people put down America, boys and girls, but I am proud to be in a country where I have a ringside fucking seat to the freak parade. I mean, I can sit here and just watch that bastard go right by. And it's, who needs TV when you've got the American freak parade?
Well, that's true enough. And, yeah, there's the compromised second draft, right.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, I'm going to go because I know there's somebody waiting to...
And you know what? You could take the remainder of the evening and just watch the movie.
Well, you know, tonight may be the best night of all to do that because I don't need to go to the store. There's nothing on TV otherwise. I caught up on my 77 Sunset Strips and Wild Wild Wests.
You're all set with a rich abundance of Taster's Choice.
I've literally run out of bullshit excuses. I have no other choice.
Just
Do you think Punky will get anything out of the movie?
Oh, Punky will love the movie. Absolutely.
I caught him the other day. There was a thing on PBS about birds. And I caught him sitting there looking at the TV screen watching the birds. And then there was a thing on about monkeys. And he thought that was just really great television.
Smart bird.
He's looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? I just happen to be looking that way. And meanwhile, the cat is curled up on the sofa, and she doesn't care about television.
Well, the bird's a ventriloquist. He's doing it all.
Yeah. All right. All right, Bob. Well, you all take care. You take care. Tell everybody hello. They're up in the hills.
Yeah, I will. And in the chat room, Hoghead suggested Sling TV has all those channels, only cheaper.
Yeah, I've heard about, there was a thing, it was a side-by-side chart of all the different alternative carriers, I guess, that were available, and I'm going to look at that again because I did see Sling as one of the options.
And by the way, now we have now engendered a discussion of the relative merits of instant coffee. Randy in PA wants you to know that Nescafe Classico is better than Nescafe Taster's Choice.
Well, I have tried it, to tell you the truth, but I like it. It's too strong for me, even the non dark roast version of Classico. Now I'll tell you, about 2 years ago, Nescafe had another instant coffee that was even as good as Taster's Choice, but they stopped making it. It was like it was pronounced Suave or Suave or something. And it was great. It was, to my taste, it was even better than Taster's Choice. And I even called the company and I said, have you all stopped making this? I've gone to, eight different stores and I can't find it. And she said, yeah. I said, well, what do you got that's close to it? And she said, well, let me send you some coupons for Taster's Choice. I think you'll find that to be close enough. But
this is,
I guess, a Spanish name, and the translation is something like,
well, Starbucks does those little crystals packets now too. They don't say instant coffee on them. It's like Starbucks to go.
I've seen those in the store.
I used to keep a few of their decaps around. In that, just for those moments when I knew I didn't have a rat's chance of getting anything resembling a decent cup of decaf, and of course now the emails will come in about there is no such thing as decent decaf. But
well, as a general rule, I don't like Starbucks coffee.
Oh, I don't either. It's just burned up beans, as far as I can tell.
And what's the deal with everybody raves about, what is it, Dunkin' Donuts coffee?
Oh, me neither.
I've never had it. Oh, here's something interesting. About a year and a half ago, the local NBC station moved to a new building, and it used to be right downtown. Now there's a Dunkin' Donuts where it used to be, so I must stop in there. And I don't like Dunkin' Donuts. I like Krispy Kremes, damn it.
Well,
if you're
see,
have a donut,
I was about to say, I'm a Krispy Kreme guy. Dunkin' Donuts hold no fascination for me except for the fact that they do offer their corporate industrialized version of the Cronut.
Now, what is that's like a croissant or something, isn't it?
It's a flaky, layered donut made with croissant dough that was invented by some highfalutin pastry chef in New York and took the city by storm. And, you know, they pay like $23 for a goddamn donut because, you know, it's New York. And But
do all the Dunkin' Donuts have that?
I don't know. I mean, we've got one. It's relatively new to us here, next to the Little General Rippy Mart, you know, in the same building there, with a Subway. And I tried one there.
Was it good? I mean,
this one was peanut butter, and it had like this peanut butter filling to it, and a chocolate drizzle, you know, across it and the glaze, and it was rich as hell, but it was really kind of tasty.
Well, see, I guess I'm an old school purist when it comes to donut. To me, you can't beat either the original Krispy Kreme glazed or the Krispy Kreme cake donut with the little bit of chocolate icing on top. Those are the only two
buy. Oh, no, I'm a purist, and this goes way, way, way back. The first time I was ever anywhere near an actual Krispy Kreme store, there was one in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, when I was going to the university there. And they had a neon light that they would turn on at certain times of the day.
Oh, yeah. Hot and fresh.
No, hot now. Hot now.
Oh, yeah.
And that thing would blink in a searing neon image inside my eyelids at 2 o'clock in the morning. And yes, yeah. At 2 o'clock in the morning, as a student, I went over to Dunkin' Donuts to get those suckers coming off the line hot. And
Krispy Kreme?
Yeah, Krispy Kreme. I'm sorry. And there's nothing like them because they're so insubstantial when they're hot like that. You can just cram the whole thing in your mouth and it's gone.
They melt. Poof, they melt in your mouth. They're like one of those old breath strips, Listerine.
Only wonderful. And you can get close if you just buy a box of them. You can get close by putting an original Krispy Kreme in the microwave for like 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And it'll be close, but it's not the same. The last time I got into a box of Hot Nows, and we just call them Hot Nows around here. We had been down for the NASCAR race a couple of years back, courtesy of our dear friend Kath in Canada. And Ferg and I were headed out of Darlington and Florence, South Carolina, when Ferg says, "Krispy Kreme, Hot Now sign." And, you know, I just turned the car around, wheeled it in there, and we ran in and got a dozen Hot Nows. And it was embarrassing.
I remember that neon sign. It must have been a patented color scheme. It was a rich neon sort of red orange.
Yeah.
And you're right, it did. It blazed itself into your optic nerve, and you could never quite get the impression of it out of your skull.
And so all of our Krispy Kremes come from the bakery down in South Charleston, West Virginia. And they deliver up to Oak Hill and Fayetteville and Beckley and what have you. I recently had to call the customer comment line. It was unbearable.
Oh no!
Yeah, it was terrible. I bought on successive occasions from the same store. I bought about a week apart two half dozens of their glazed jelly donuts. One lemon, one raspberry.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those 12 donuts, two in each box had no filling.
No.
So it was just like an original Krispy Kreme, only it wasn't, only it didn't have the hole in the middle. It was just empty. And yeah. And when I bite into a Krispy Kreme jelly donut, expecting either a blast of raspberry or lemon, and it's not there. Well, I mean, you want to talk about first world problems, Scott. I mean, my taste buds are ready for one thing, and it doesn't happen.
it's
like dry humping. I mean, there's no point.
Well, I wasn't going to go quite that far. I was going to say it's a very disheartening, disappointing moment, because literally you're primed for a kick of that sensation, that taste sensation. Jeez.
Oh, and I mean, I'm so pathetically obsessive compulsive. You know, I find the hole where they injected the jelly. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, and the first bite has to be taken out of that hole, or else the jelly will try to get back out through the way it got in.
Yeah.
And then you try to work it so that you get a little bit of the jelly with every bite of donut. It's a terrible thing to live inside my head. It just is.
Do you give tours? I guess that's what this show is. It's a tour of your head.
Well, you know, there are hazmat suits and inoculations involved, but yeah. Well, Scott, have yourself a wonderful evening. It's 5:32 out there. I see no reason that we can't have a report by tomorrow evening.
Well, after having thought about it for a couple of seconds, you're right.
And you know, if anybody comes to distract you or knock on your door, just show up with a pistol strapped to your hip and a shotgun propped in the corner. And boy, son, I'm watching the Big Lebowski here, and I don't need no interruptions.
Yeah, don't you know that there are important things going on here?
And I do not want to talk about your my home on Kolob. Thank you.
All right, I'll watch it tonight. Guaranteed. No question.
All right. Take it easy, Scott.
All right, Bob. See ya.
Later. Oh, donut lore, courtesy of Steve from Georgistan. A lot of your donut franchise annexes deliver the donuts frozen. There's no such thing as the Dunkin' Donut man getting up at 4 a.m. in the morning anymore. They deliver them frozen, and they just microwave them. That's why they suck so bad. I suspected as much. No, they're just thawing and baking there. I mean, and maybe it is just a matter of microwaves. But yeah, they blow. It's Krispy Kreme or nothing, damn it. This sounds intriguing. Brother Deacon Asa telling me, you got to try Chinese donuts. We have them here served hot in some Chinese stores. The closest thing I can think of would be churros. Oh, that sounds very intriguing. Very intriguing indeed. Hey, look, we had a clip from Washington Journal this morning, and lo and behold, there's our official Washington Journal correspondent, Barbecue Todd in South Carolina. What's happening, Todd?
Yeah, you know it's on the menu, man. So, you know, I was listening when that happened, and I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, you heard that live, did you?
Well, that's my thing.
I know, you take it, yeah, it's your job.
It's what I do. I can't help it. So, yeah, Pedro's like, I mean, I don't look at it. I listen to it on the radio so I can do other things, you know. Because, you know, that water is deep and it's cold, too.
Yeah, well, right, yes.
But, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so Pedro was like, and I could hear it in his voice. It was like, oh, okay. You know, he asked her a couple more questions. And you know, I get her sentiment. Like, all right, I'm going to give you some fortitude. I'm going to give you some armor. I'm going to, you know, make you stronger for life. But the thing is, when you listen to the whole show, it's a lot, man. It's a lot of stuff going on. It's, you know, people have, it's America, man. People have issues. And it's funny because I didn't hear one person who was Republican who sounded like they were white make any comment about the president's statements about the shithole countries. You know, they made no connection with that. It's like there's nothing there. They cannot make that connection. And I just found that very interesting. And the connection they still make is that Obama was such a divisive president, you know, walking around all black and everything. And
yeah, exactly. He was divisive because of his because he just didn't have the common decency to stop being so goddamn black. Even
when in fact,
I was going to say, well, even like when say, in fact he did everything in his power to mollify white people to the point that it became a joke with comedy teams like Key and Peele and you know Obama's anger translator.
Right, exactly, and that made folks feel uncomfortable, very uncomfortable, and that's okay. It's good. People need to be uncomfortable to grow. You know what I mean? That's part of growing. You need to feel a little bit uncomfortable once in a while. But yes, and see, you get it. You know, you kind of get that. The problem is that a lot of people don't get it. And, you know, we're just in growing pains, I guess, or whatever. So is this movie that Scott is supposed to watch? Is he supposed to watch fucking, are you serious? That's the movie he's supposed to watch?
The Big Lebowski?
The Big Lebowski?
Yeah, he's never seen it. We've been begging him to watch it for a year and a half.
But wait a minute. That's not the type of movie. He's not going to watch this shit one time. You got to watch that movie like, well, I'm slow. That movie's got so much going on. It's so much going on. The movie's layered. You got to watch that movie like 10 times.
Seriously. Well, yeah, but I mean, the journey of a thousand miles begins with one step. He's got to watch the movie once first before he can watch it 10 times, Todd. I mean, you know that.
How did he get to be 62 fucking or six, whatever the hell he is, 60-something, and not see that movie?
See, I got nothing.
What the fuck? Was he in prison? Prison? What the fuck? Work release? Oh, wait, that was a motherfucker on work release. My bad. That's right. My bad. Yeah. And what has he seen the in-laws? And Scott, I'm not fucking with you. I'm just saying, man. I mean, because I'm not a big movie person, but I'm like, a good movie is a work of art, like a good commercial.
Yeah.
Is a work of art. You know, because, whatever. Like last night, that was the first time I saw Men Staring at Goats. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was a weird movie.
But you know what made it for me is that all those years I used to listen to Art Bell and listen to Ed Danes, the remote viewer. See, when you get all that information behind you, it makes more sense. Because some of that shit they were doing, like DARPA. DARPA's a trip. You know, DARPA, they do all kinds of weird shit. All right. So, you know, this Hawaii thing, I've been talking with folks, right? People who are not even interested in conspiracy things. It doesn't smell right at all.
Well, see, that's me, Todd. I mean, I don't run around saying false flag. I don't do that. I live in a land of facts and reality.
Yep.
And there's just something about that makes no sense. I mean,
it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, we all know what a drop-down menu is. Send alert, test alert system. Do you really want to do this? Yes. So what, we have to add a third layer? Are you really sure you want to do this? Pinky swear? Because we're living in a very dangerous time. And Donnie Dipshit, not, you know, he's looking for a reason to launch. And I'm sure that his generals, see, they got me doing it now. I'm sure that the brass have explained to him.
My general. Sorry.
That's okay. But I'm sure the brass has explained to him, we can't shoot first because there are all kinds of treaty obligations over there that would make mushrooms bloom all over the United States if we did. China is obliged to defend North Korea if we shoot first. And in the last week and a half or so, there have been stories put out about the idea of a limited first strike. Because this fucker wants a war.
Badly.
He wants to be a wartime commander-in-chief.
Okay.
With something like that, something like what happened on Saturday could very easily have provided him the casus belli he needed to push the button.
Okay. I accept your hypothesis there. I see three different scenarios. One is that someone in Hawaii who's in that network who has access, they did it just to wake people up, like, you know what? All right, the guy's president, but he has no gravitas, no standing, no moral standing to take us to war or to be in charge of letting loose nuclear weapons. He just doesn't, you know, that's not acceptable for him to do that because it's him. Scenario two is that it was just a computer malfunction. All right.
Three.
Scenario three. Well, what do you think three is? Because what's left?
False flag.
Just what you said. Right. Exactly. That's really because, and this is the reason I say three. I have not seen, heard anything, and I read a lot of newspapers. No reports of anything seen in the sky. In other words, there were no missiles going on in the sky that would have triggered that. You know, because remember, the third world, which, you know, most poor people, they can't string up telephone lines anymore. Everybody's doing everything mobile, online. They're doing their banking. Everybody's using mobile phones everywhere. Like, I mean, you know, we can come home and use our laptops and desktops here, but a lot of places that, you know, they might live in a hut, but they got a fucking cell phone.
Oh, hell, when this program first started, I did all, there's been a progression. At first, I printed all my stories, and I had all my stories written in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I was wasting a shit ton of paper and ink. So the computers got strong enough that they could manage to hold several tabs open at one time. And I moved to that. Well, now I've got as many stories open on iOS devices as I do on anything else. And mm-hmm. So, you know, my show prep, my research and whatever, I can do it. I can do it on the browser on my phone.
That's a good thing.
And one of these days, you know, we'll all just have little chips implanted in our necks, and that'll be it. And we'll get our Wi-Fi that way, and it'll project on the inside of our eyelids.
Well.
And we'll blink them away.
We'll blink them away. So your friend Armstrong Williams was on C-SPAN later on in the morning.
My buddy.
Your buddy. With Jesse, what's that old senile dude? He sounds like he's drunk all the time. Jesse, Jesse something. He's like Armstrong Williams except older. I think his first name is Jesse. He has a show too, but he sounds like he's like really drunk all the time, and he has like a colonoscopy bag or something. I don't know.
I didn't know you could hear that, but.
I mean, well, you hear the sloshing.
Oh, you hear the sloshing. Okay, yeah. Got it.
It's not, I mean, I'm not disparaging the people who have to have, you know, pieces of their colon cut out. I'm just saying this guy is so just weirdo, evil, where he doesn't get it. You know, one of these apologetic Negroes, I don't know. Yeah, so it's MLK Day. Hippie hop, you know.
You sound like uh, You're not buying the corporate line there, Todd.
Me? Oh, I buy corporate shit all the time. What do you mean?
Oh, no, I mean, you
no,
just...
No, I'm not.
Yeah, it is. So let's check in on some comments from people who really should just keep their goddamn mouth shut on MLK Day. This year marks the 55th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s March on Washington. Dr. King inspired all of us to walk together in the cause of freedom. That's Senator Mitch McConnell's office. You might recall that Senator Mitch McConnell suppressed the reading of the words of Coretta Scott King on the floor of the Senate during the confirmation hearings regarding Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to be the Attorney General of the United States of America. So he needs to shut up.
Yes.
Then there's Bill Cassidy from Louisiana Stan, who says whether Trump said shithole or not is not the issue. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward. Bill Cassidy, keep moving forward, he tweeted. Then there's Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who went temporarily, miraculously deaf when Trump was saying shithole.
You had to bring him up, didn't you?
Well, I'm sorry. With great eloquence and even greater courage, Martin Luther King Jr. challenged our country to live up to our founding principles and recognize our fundamental equality before God. My full statement on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and a link. He needed to just stay shut up. And I include myself in this. Maybe we should give a secondary name to this holiday. White people, be quiet and listen day. Quit acting like you understand the experience that lies behind the motivation for this holiday in the first place. Senator Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a long time, anointed future booger-eating king of America, said, "Today we honor the life and legacy of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Reverend King was a champion of the American creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal." Yes, yes, that's right. America's anointed booger-eating future king of America quoted the lines of the Declaration of Independence written by a slave owner in marking the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Goddess of irony is going to flick him like a stink bug one of these days.
You know, what really made me a little irritated was the fact that we're seeing everybody's, you know, I'm about to start making, I think I've got a new gig coming up. I'm going to start making canes, like with the heavy, like a duck head out of brass.
Yeah.
Because pretty soon we're going to back to the Sumner days. These motherfuckers will start beating each other over the head in the goddamn Senate and the House, because that's where it's coming to now. Because look at what, my name is Sonny Perdue. Now you talk like that, it's like fucking Jeff Sessions. He should have apologized for the way he looks, the way he talks, all that shit. Being Attorney General, looking like a cracker, talking like a cracker, and acting like a cracker.
It's the acting like part that really gets me.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's like you're two-thirds of the way to a duck, and now you're growing feathers. You need to back the fuck up. So, yeah, but I'm saying is that these people are entrenched in crackerdom. Like Sonny Perdue, I ain't hear him say that. Hell no, I'm from Delaware. And Tom Cotton, you know, he's the erudite cracker. Like, I've been to college, and I don't have to talk like a cracker, but I can't stand him, goddamn.
Wait a minute. first cowbell of the night belongs to you.
Oh, shit. Okay. I had to get my spreadsheet out. Thank you. No, I'm serious. No, but seriously, what the fuck, man? Now, why are they entrenched? Lindsey Graham. And it's not like we don't believe Trump doesn't talk. He's always been a goddamn cracker. Fuck him. He's always been like this. That's what we've been trying to tell the whole fucking country. But middle America doesn't want to accept it. He's the great white hope. That's all they want to know. But these people call in, back to Washington Journal. They call in every morning. Oh, my God. Obama was the fault. He just caused all this racism and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, well, you know, do you ever listen to yourselves?
Well, let me ask. Okay, on that issue, Todd, let me ask a question. And I realize this is delicate, and I don't know. I want to make sure I get it right, so that probably means I won't. You cannot blame Barack Obama for the fact that this country has a bunch of goddamn Klan sympathizing, Clavering member and neo-Nazi assholes. That ain't his fault. We kind of pretended for a long time that they weren't there until in 2016 that we found out that they're actually the majority of the Republican goddamn party in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, the election of Barack Obama drove them absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach at a decon party, okay? It just did.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we talk about that without making it sound like we're saying that, you know, he was the cause of it? They were there all along, but his mere existence in the White House drove them out of the tiny remnants of their minds. How do we talk about that?
By keep bringing it up, because it defies logic. Once, you know, at some point, it's like when people try to quit smoking or whatever, at some point it's going to click. You know, it didn't work my first time, my second time, my eighth time. But I had it in my mind that I was going to try it. They don't want to put forth any effort into a different type of thought process because it's too painful. See, change is painful. It hurts. It hurts. Growth hurts. That's why kids grow at night. It hurts. They grow when they sleep.
Yeah, growing pains are real things.
They are.
It's a physical phenomenon, yes.
It's a physical phenomenon, right. And just like xenophobia, you know, you're going to have to develop some new neural pathways. It may not hurt in your brain, but, you know, it's going to make you feel uncomfortable in different situations. Just like black people are used to being in rooms full of white people, with, you know, look around, okay, you know, whatever. You know, I'm probably not going to get shot here because we all have ties on, whatever. But you know, probably not.
Has it been your experience that at the same time you're standing there in that room going, I know what words are running through some of these people's minds. It just has to. It's the statistical reality.
You know what? I was brought up like this for a fleeting second, yes. But you know what? I can't waste my psychic energy on that. And that philosophy served me well for most of my life. Because for most of my life, it wasn't this bad. It really wasn't. But see, we had the confluence of an increasingly anemic public education system and a declining economy. Because remember, when Reagan came in, we made working people, if you work for a check, you made a pact with the government in the early 80s when that recession hit and Reagan came in. It was like, you know what? Unions have messed everything up and, you know, we're just all going to have to bite the bullet for a few years because the Japanese have taken over with the cars and pay cuts and give up a few things, but it'll be okay. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically, that's what those motherfuckers, that's what those people were saying, who were in charge. And if I mean, you know, sometimes I think, say things that are wrong, like, get an adverb or an adjective to describe something. But if I'm wrong, you tell me.
Not from where I sit. Sorry, no.
Because I remember that. And then it was like, we kept taking, then, because I was in the union. First, when I first started work, boom, I'm in the union. You know, ask me, you know, whatever union it was, I was in it. And we kept taking cuts and cuts and cuts and cuts. There's nothing left to cut. And they're talking about cutting welfare. What welfare? There's no welfare. Clinton did that. He had Republican to Republicans. That's one of the reasons they hate him, I think. He did what they couldn't do. So, you know, I think, okay, so back to your question. I don't know. It's like you hit a brick wall with some of these people. You got to see it in their eyes. You present them with the facts, and it just glazes over. It's like, oh, no, it's not my fault. It's your fault. I'm like, okay. You know, you can keep believing that. The world's moving on. You know, why do you think, and these people keep calling, why do you keep beating up on Trump? And I already went through that. It's because, he beats himself up. It's the news. Say something positive.
You gotta punch back at somebody who's already punching you. I mean, you're supposed to sing a couple of choruses of Kumbaya and let them stomp the shit out of you?
No, you can't do that.
No, you can't. Hey, Todd, we're up against it. Got to get out of here, but I've enjoyed our conversation.
Take care, man.
I'm going to try.
And listen, everybody, please contribute. Bob is giving people a voice, and Bob is doing a great job. And I forgot to say that last time. And, bye, Bob.
All right. Later, Todd. Thank you. I appreciate it. And so, thanks to the Trump is driving me nuts, Paulman challenge this evening. Well, by golly, we got right up to within $10 of the fundraising goal. So if we want to knock that last $10 out, that'd be cool. And then we've got just a regular fundraising goal for tomorrow. And if we get through the week, then boom, no fundraising, fundraising free end of January. And wouldn't that be cool? So thanks, everybody. Thanks to everybody for wandering into the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our Sparky for moderating. And thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.